That is correct. It is I. Welcome to Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. Saturday morning, 7 o'clock. Ready to get to work? Okay, let's have a go at this. Let me see if I can get back to my information right here. Okay. This is for your consideration. Before you... I need you to be open-minded today. Just keep an open mind. Don't tell me this is not true, because it's already been proven. It's true. Okay. Back in 1960, that was just a little bit before I was born. But back in 1960, there was a very interesting physician who was able to think outside the box. His name was Dr. Alvin F. Coburn. He published a study based on his unique findings because he was open-minded. All he was doing was reporting what he had seen and what he had observed. So if you have a concern about the health of your body and the health of your cells, especially during this time that we have fear and pandemonium everywhere, you might want to listen to this. Back in 1960, Dr. Alvin F. Coburn, just in case you want to go look this information up, he published a landmark report in the British medical journal called The Lancet. I don't even know how long The Lancet has been around. I'm going to guess 1827. I may have made that up. But anyway, it's been around a long time. Very prestigious journal. So in 1960, Dr. Coburn wrote in The Lancet that he had found cases of childhood rheumatic fever. They were dramatically declined among children who ate eggs. When I walked through the refrigerated section of the store yesterday, guess what I saw available on the shelf? Or in the refrigerated section, or the freezer? Eggs. Toilet paper aisle? None. Paper towels? Not any. Kleenexes? A few. But eggs? They had plenty. I don't know if there would be plenty if every person in this city went to buy eggs, but there were plenty of eggs. And so what he did was he looked at childhood rheumatic fever and he says, oh my goodness, look at what I'm finding here. Children that just eat eggs are the healthiest. Now this is interesting to me. Dr. Coburn had actually opened a clinic just for the express purpose of treating a childhood rheumatic fever, that in 1955, the clinic had to be shut down. I'm thinking the reason why it was shut down, and forgive me, I wasn't laughing because it's funny, ha-ha. It's probably because he was a very good doctor, and he probably figured out that children that eat eggs, they do not have rheumatic fever, and they certainly don't have a recurrence or a relapse. So maybe that was the answer, but he's not here for me to interview, so we have to go with my gut instinct on this. And back in 1955, when he associated a higher egg consumption among families that were directly under his observation, he also observed that children who developed rheumatic fever may have better diets rich in animal protein, milk, vitamin A and vitamin C. But, however, they did not eat more eggs. Another published survey reported children with rheumatic fever disliked eggs. Isn't that interesting? So you could probably ask yourself the question, okay, do kids that get sick all the time, do they actually like to eat eggs? Do they dislike them? Do they turn up their nose? Do they prefer frosted cocoa sugar bombs or Fruit Loops or whatever would be loaded with sugar and chemicals? That's a good question. I like that one. The incidence of rheumatic fever was 2.8% among kids who ate the least eggs. Okay, I know that doesn't sound significant to you. You're thinking, Dr. Morgan, you're only talking about maybe 3 kids out of 100 that develop rheumatic fever. Yeah, but if it was your kid that had a fever and had damage that was being done potentially to their heart or maybe to their reproductive areas or to their kidneys, or their arteries or their joints. You would not like that. Of course not. There's no parent that wants their kids getting sick. So just think about this for a second. Was there a point in time that you made a habit of serving eggs for breakfast, or for supper for that matter, to your children, and now all of a sudden you don't? Maybe things have changed in your life where it's easier to grab a box of Fruit Loops or cook honey buns for the kids or serve them donuts. No, that is nuts. I'm not criticizing. I didn't call you nuts anyway. I'm just saying that is nuts. So now's the chance to reevaluate. Nobody wants their kids getting sick. Nobody wants the mom and dad getting sick. And so the incidence of rheumatic fever was 2.8% among those who ate the least eggs. You notice I didn't say no eggs. It said the least eggs in this observational study by Dr. Coburn. And the occurrence of rheumatic fever was only 0.6% among kids who ate the most eggs. Well, if you take a statistics class, that's a almost 500% difference. I don't see how you can overlook that. So the kids that ate the most eggs, they had the lowest occurrence of rheumatic fever, but those that had the least, they had the most infection. So what did Dr. Coburn do? He did what every good doctor would do. He said, I'm going to put this to the test, and I am going to find out what the truth is on this. So here were the results. He had three groups of children, Group A, Group B, and Group C. Now, Group A, he said they were on the normal American diet. Now, I tried to find out what that is. I could not find it out. But what I want you to think is Group A is the typical standard American diet. And so in Group A, they were on the normal diet. Group B, now get this, they were reinforced from the normal diet with just two eggs. And they also took a little bit of cod liver oil, which is going to be a source of vitamin D and vitamin A, but especially vitamin A. In Group C, they had a normal diet that was reinforced with what's called egg yolk powder. And when I looked it up, the egg yolk was four egg yolks. So it did not say what the delivery system was, but this is not rocket science. So you either stir it into some juice or you find a way to add it to a food that the kids are eating or something. But it's just the powder of four egg yolks. And I kind of thought to myself, Roy, if they put this in it, if they dehydrated it very gently to preserve all the unique vitamins and the enzymes, once they suck the water out of the egg yolk, there's probably not much there anyway. It's probably just a spoonful. Anyway, so here's the results of Dr. Coburn's observations or his testing. Group A, they were on the normal American diet. They had nutritional deficiencies, yeah. And so once these kids had rheumatic fever, what was the recurrence rate? Well, it was in 11 of 29 kids. I just borrowed Randy's calculator. I hope it's not contaminated, Randy. It better not be. So in Group A, that had nutritional deficiencies in the standard American diet and had least amount of eggs, the recurrence of rheumatic fever in this normal diet was 37.93%. Thank you, calculator. In Group 2, children that had the reinforced diet with two eggs, and they also had, it said they had butter and cod liver oil. Only 3 of the 35 children had a recurrence. Well, that comes out to a 8.5% recurrence. You tell me, do you want the 37.93% recurrence of rheumatic fever? Or do you want the 8.? All they did was add eggs. But it did say they had cod liver oil also, which I am not trying to overstate this, but just maybe we can extract or learn something very, very good by this. It's eggs and cod liver oil. You know what Group C was? Group C was just a normal diet, but it was reinforced with what's called powdered egg yolk. You know what the recurrence rate was of the rheumatic fever? one out of 25 had a recurrence. That's 4%. That is huge. If there was a drug baby that could do this, it would be the top-selling drug right now. So Dr. Coburn took that information. This is back in 1960, by the way. You realize, what is that, 60 to 20? That's like 60 years ago, right? Okay, here we go. Dr. Coburn then launched a two-year study with half of the children given four egg yolks a day. Among 28 children who developed a sore throat, who received no medication and no eggs, 10% had a recurrence of the symptoms, came back. Among, I didn't do the math on that. Let me do that real quick. What is that, 28%? Let's find out. 10 divided by 28 equals times 100. Okay. I was wrong, 35%. So those that had no eggs in their diet, they had a 35.7% recurrence of the sore throat. Who wants a child with a sore throat all the time? Nobody does. It says among the 28 children who ate egg powder equivalent to four eggs a day, so basically they took four egg yolks, they put them in a powdered form, gave them to the kids as a food supplement. Maybe we'll call this a super food supplement. There was one recurrence. So 1 divided by 28 equals times. Oh man, I totally messed that up. Let me do it again. If I could only see this better. 1 divided by 28 times 100. Okay, 3.57. I made it too complicated. That is huge, folks. All because of the power of egg yolks. Only one kid had a recurrence rheumatic fever. All right. I have sort of covered this topic, but this is one of the ways that human beings learn. It's one of the ways I learn. If I don't understand something the first time, I'll read it again. If I look at it and go, what is that saying? I'm going to have to read it a third time or fourth time. And at first, that was a very maddening process for me because I kind of felt like, Roy, you should be able to get this. But that's just the way it is. So if you don't understand something the first time, if you don't hear it, don't worry about that. I'm going to try to repeat these things over and over again so you have every opportunity to take great care of yourself and your husbands and your wives and your moms and your dads and your kids and everybody else. And so we're going to talk about eggs for just a moment. I know, I'm very familiar, this is going to be a very unpopular topic because there's a certain group of individuals that are telling you that eggs are evil because they contain cholesterol. Well, just keep an open mind, put that thought on hold for a second. Of course, I think, you know what I'm recommending you do today? Don't get sick. And if you don't get sick, you won't have a chance to go to the hospital. And if you don't go to the hospital, you're not going to be exposed to all the death and the sickness. Don't go to the hospital. That's my recommendation to you. All right. Eggs are shown to contain somewhere between 100 to 150 milligrams of immunoglobulins. You're probably saying to yourself, Dr. Morgan, what do you mean egg immunoglobulins? That's nutty talk. Okay, well, maybe it is. What are immunoglobulins? These are proteins in your blood serum that are known as antibodies that bind to antigens such as those from either toxic bacteria like Salmonella or Staph or Streptococcus. Or what about a virus called the MERS or the SARS coronavirus? Or what about the COVID-19? Yeah. Immunoglobulins, these are like antibodies. You want these. If you don't have these, you'll have to live the rest of your life in a plastic bubble. Do you want to be known as the boy or the girl in the plastic bubble? No. I realize that was not the kid's choice, but eggs are a great source of these immunoglobulins. And so when you eat eggs, you are providing your body with these precious immunoglobulins, and they actually attach to the virus resulting in the ability of your immune system to come up on the virus and say, hey, you are a foreign invader. We're going to eat you and kill you. So if you want these viruses to be destroyed by the immune system, you need immunoglobulins. What's the source of those? Egg yolks. I just have never understood the idea of making a protein drink with egg white powder. The egg white without the yolk is nuttiness. I sure haven't promoted that. You need the rich nutritional density of the egg yolk. So eggs over easy, or scrambled eggs, or hard-boiled eggs, or poached eggs, any way you like them. So when you take one egg, you're getting somewhere between 100 to 150 milligrams of immunoglobulins. It's fine with me if your doctor or your nurse has provided a better plan for you. I am all ears. Let's hear it. And so these proteins, called immunoglobulins, they will actually bind to the coronavirus. You know, and the one thing that we've got to talk about today, and I'll make this real fast, you're going to have to be exposed to this at some point. Now, in my mind, this is the way that I think of it. This may not be the best analogy, but here goes. You remember years ago when anthrax was being mailed to political figures and government employees? Well, if you look at the studies on anthrax, and that is a very, very bad, bad bacterial problem. I mean, it could kill you. And I don't remember exactly, but I want to say it was somewhere between maybe 8 to 10,000 spores of anthrax. That's what it took to be, quote, a lethal dose. If I've got those numbers wrong, forgive me, we'll look them up. But you get, for the sake of conversation this morning, one spore of anthrax, if that comes into your body, your immune system is going to recognize that as a foreign invader. So you tell me, would you rather be stormed by one bad guy or by 8,000? Well, obviously, the 8,000 is going to overwhelm your defenses. It's going to be more than what you can handle. So there's going to be a certain lethal dose. Does that make sense? Okay. So, in your normal day-to-day living, let's just say you go out in public and you breathe the air that somebody has coughed or sneezed or blasted in the atmosphere 3 hours earlier. They've shown in studies that the coronavirus can easily last for 3 hours floating around in the air. Okay, well, that doesn't sound good to me, because I think it was Friday before last I had to go to Lowe's, and I listened to this guy hack and cough. He was smoking, but he was spitting stuff out, and I thought to myself, he thinks that he is just good to go and perfectly fine, and there's no reason for him to stay out of, you know, the home improvement store. Yeah, and that's the way that people think. I know that's nuts, but that's just human nature. Even though they're sick and they've got a fever and they're hacking and coughing and gunk is coming out, they still think that there's no way that they could be a source of a problem. I know. Anyway, let me drop that topic. But you're going to have to be exposed to the coronavirus at some point. And the advantage of being exposed to it in small amounts is, number one, if you're not blasted by 30 bazillion viruses at one time by a blast in your face from somebody that sneezed or coughed on you, then if you come in contact with just one or two, you present something to your immune system to give it a better chance to rise to the occasion and start generating antibodies or immunoglobulins against the coronavirus, right? It probably didn't make sense. Well, it makes sense to me. I want just a teeny tiny coronavirus challenge, because then my thymus gland can start generating antibodies, and I can start producing the T killer cells and the T lymphocytes, and my spleen can work at generating antibodies. And if I eat eggs every day, I'm going to get the immunoglobulins. And if I take zinc every day, I'm making it so much easier for my immune system to respond appropriately. Okay? So now egg yolk antibodies are being considered as an alternative to antibiotic drugs that induce germ resistance. Which, if you take an antibiotic, Every time you take an antibiotic, your immune system is just a little bit weaker. I even listened to the podcast with Dr. Vladimir Zelenko. I think he's a Jewish physician that is taking care of hundreds of people that have the COVID-19. And he has used, the Plaquenil, the hydroxychloroquinone, the old malarial drug, zithromycin, which is an antibiotic, or Z-Pak if you want to call it that. And he's using 220 milligrams of zinc sulfate a day. Now, I started to look up the article about zinc inhibiting. It stops the RNA polymerase activity of the coronavirus, but you got to get it in the body. And he's using 220 milligrams a day. This is the 5-day drug course. Costs $20, according to him. I don't know. Does that make a difference if a cure costs $20 versus... Anyway, I was starting to be negative. I didn't do that. You see how I pulled myself back? Okay, let me see right here. I'm not going to talk about antibiotics. Don't want to talk about that. But even Dr. Zelenko says these people that take these drugs, there are horrible side effects to taking those drugs. But he says to himself, is this going to save them from being intubated? If you have to have tubes put into your lungs, so that's just bad news, Magruder. And so, let me see right here. What was I reading? Okay, store-bought eggs have been reported to produce full recovery from the flu. I know that's a different type of virus, but it's an RNA virus like the coronavirus is an RNA virus. And so, do you understand what I'm saying to you today? You might want to consider at the foremost of your arsenal nutritionally, you may want to consider eating eggs. You can tell me you don't want to eat eggs and that you want to wait for doctors to develop a vaccine. All I can say is more power to you. Are eggs available right now? Yes. They've shown that one single chicken can produce 40,000 milligrams of egg immunoglobulins. They're now identifying these immunoglobulins as IgY. Why? Because it comes from the yolk of a chicken. I think that's clever. I like that. These immunoglobulins also afford widespread protection from enterointestinal viruses such as polio and Coxsackie viruses, as well as the rotavirus that's been shown to really cause diarrhea in kids and in animals. These Y immunoglobulins, oh man, they're fabulous against Salmonella and E. coli and Staphylococcus and tuberculosis and Clostridium difficile and H. pylori. And I kind of thought to myself, I have had some very unusual cases over the years where I tried to convince a person to eat more ketogenically because of the severe diarrhea they had. And I'm just thinking back now, I wonder if some of this had to do with more consumption of eggs. Because if you look at eggs, yeah, they got a boatload of cholesterol. Now, what I want to convince you of, you can choose to believe it or not believe it, the cholesterol is the biggest honking sponge of toxins that's in your bloodstream right now. I may not be 100% correct, but for the sake of conversation, that's what I want you to buy into, and that's what I want you to believe. So if your cholesterol is elevated, let me reverse this. Or let me go backwards and start over again. Has it been shown that when somebody has an infection that their LDL lipoprotein goes up every single time? If you're taking a drug to lower the LDL lipoprotein, sometimes it's called LDL cholesterol, I'm okay with that. That's just nomenclature. Does that mean that you might be more prone to developing cancer or infection? Yeah, you betcha you are. The studies show that if you take a statin-lowering drug, you're definitely most vulnerable to developing type 2 diabetes. If you ask me which group, this comes from Ava. She told me she was watching Fox News, and they said that I think it was 41%. I hope I'm quoting her correctly because she's my go-to on this. But she told me that 41% of the deaths from the COVID-19 in New Orleans also had diabetes. And so I'm telling you specifically, if you want to look up the studies for yourself and show that taking statin-lowering drugs are definitely, they have a tendency to cause people that take them to develop type 2 diabetes, look it up for yourself. I am certain that your doctor or your nurse practitioner has told you in great detail they want you to take a cholesterol-lowering drug, but it comes with a price. You will most likely develop adult-onset type 2 diabetes. And so you don't have to be a genius with this. When your blood sugar is elevated, does that make it easier for a virus or a bacteria to take over your body? Oh, my goodness, yes. Let me ask you a question. If you were coming down sick, would you go out and buy a six-pack of Mountain Dew and eat a bunch of Bluebell ice cream? Yes, I know. There are so many doctors that their top recommendation, go eat your Bluebell ice cream to add some weight to your body. I just don't even understand that, but I hear it all the time. And I always think it falls in the category of a person hears exactly what they want to hear. What is that called? Confirmation bias? Oh, the doctor told me I could eat Bluebell ice cream to strengthen my body. But are you serious? You would be so much better off. Okay, I know where you're going to go with this. You're going to say, but Dr. Morgan, isn't one of the ingredients of ice cream eggs? Okay, you got me on that one. But how about you make your own version of ice cream by just using cream and eggs and maybe monk fruit and fruit? Maybe you can make like a yogurt sorbet or something. Anyway, but you're not going to be better off with eating a boatload of sugar, because sugar suppresses the immune system. Even if somebody's had diabetes with an infection, they go to the hospital, their cholesterol levels are always super high and their blood sugar levels are super high with the infection. Not good. Anyway, I think I got off the topic there. All I'm suggesting is that egg yolks will provide you immunoglobulins. Yes, I know. I hear it all the time. Do not eat eggs. That's what my patients tell me is the recommendation from their physician, because they have cholesterol. But what if God actually knows what he's doing? I shouldn't say it that way. Of course God knows what he's doing. One of the highest cholesterol foods on the planet would be eggs and mother's breast milk. Are you telling me that God made a colossal mistake by putting huge amounts of cholesterol in mother's breast milk? No. You've got to have cholesterol for your brain to form memories. It's been shown that your brain does not process information correctly if your cholesterol is low. So, I haven't ever done this before, but I know that you could probably go on a major website and type in, you know, one of those websites where they have everything available. I don't have to mention what those are. It might begin with a letter E or A. But they sell egg yolk powder. But what I'm telling you is, just why don't you eat eggs? You might call eggs real legitimate food. You've got to eat something. Dr. Coburn went on to report that eggs contain a subfraction, and I'm going to do my best not to butcher the pronunciation of this. It's called PEA for short, like, you know, P. It's called palmitoethylolamide. I butchered it, I know. Palmitoethylolamide. Okay, I butchered it, sorry. And that has been shown, even though that comes from the yolk of eggs, it's been shown to have very potent anti-inflammatory activity. Now, he goes on to write that PEA is available today as a medical food, or a medicinal food, and a dietary supplement, meaning you could look it up and say, PEA supplements, and you could probably find it. And the reason, one of the, well, let me just tell you what this thing is reported to do by the ones that sell it. Pain-relieving anti-inflammatory properties. So this is a subfraction that they get from egg yolks, and it's sold to do two or three things. Number one, pain-relieving, anti-inflammatory. It's also been shown to have an application for a variety of maladies, including mental depression or even autism in children, even the common cold. Now, I realize this narrative is not going to be real popular, but what I'm saying is maybe you should consider consuming egg yolks during this one time that people are very, very stressed and people are probably very, very concerned and worried. Of course, you should take this seriously. I don't think I've ever said otherwise. I've had so many people tell me this is a conspiracy, it's no big deal, just ignore it. Well, I don't think I've told you that. I think I've told you do what you can to take good care of yourself. So if you want to choose to look into taking zinc supplementation today, I think the zinc lozenges that are made with zinc acetate are the ones or the form that's been shown to be most effective. So when you get your zinc lozenges, just spin the label around and make sure it says zinc acetate. If there's one that says zinc oxide, just skip those and get the ones that say zinc acetate. I don't have anything against the manufacturers making zinc oxide. It's just very poorly absorbed. The key is you must absorb the mineral into the cells in order for it to do the job that God has designed it to do. So, all the way back from 1960, Dr. Alvin F. Coburn in The Lancet, please look it up for yourself, read it, see if you become convinced. You know, in the Bible it says faith comes by hearing and hearing by the Word of God. Well, isn't it true that sometimes you just need to hear a different perspective? And you let that roll around in your mind or your brain or ponder it in your heart. And you have to decide for yourself if that's true or not. And if it's not true, then you can just disregard it. But what if it is true? What if eggs have an incredible ability to provide your body with what are called immunoglobulins? You know, I talked to a woman the other day who was saying her immune system is just at zero. That means she has next to no protection. So does she need to be in contact with somebody that's hacking and coughing and sneezing? No, she doesn't. She needs to steer clear of that. It's called self-quarantine, I guess. What would happen to her if she took it upon herself to say, okay, if I eat eggs for breakfast, lunch, and supper, is that okay for a week or two? Of course it is. I remember years ago reading about the gentleman that was like 86 years old, and he had to go to the doctor, and I don't know for what reason. I don't know, so that's not maybe fair of me to bring it up. But when the nurse was asking, well, what do you eat every day? He says, well, I raise chickens. I eat about 12 eggs a day. And they were just aghast. This man had the audacity to eat 12 eggs a day. I mean, didn't he know that these are full of cholesterol and fat? And those are evil? But he's also, he's 85 and he's robust and in good shape. So I might need to look that up again and see if I can find out why did he actually go to the doctor. I don't know. But you know what? I can use my imagination. Maybe he broke a toe. Maybe he dislocated a finger working on the farm. Maybe he had a piece of baling wire stuck in his skin and he wanted the doctor to expertly remove it. Or maybe the baling wire got infected or he's got a splinter that he needed to have some help with. Any number of things, right? Okay. So my point is, when he went to the doctor, they were just totally aghast that he was had the audacity to consume 12 eggs a day. And they said, okay, we're going to do like a full lab workup, and we're going to show you. We're going to fix your little red wagon. But anyway, when the labs came back, his cholesterol was completely in the acceptable range. It wasn't too high. It wasn't too low. So I mean, I know that's not like ultra scientific because that's just an observation, but please do not be scared of eggs. I want you to ask yourself a question today. If you have kids that continually have health problems, I realize if somebody is highly allergic to an egg, that is not what I'm trying to tell you, okay? I'm not telling you to give them the very thing that they have a severe allergic reaction to. Anyway, but maybe you should consider giving your kids eggs instead of honey, sugar-coated, chocolate-flavored cocoa bombs as a breakfast cereal, because that might actually be fake food. That may not be real. So Maybe they can have that every so often if that's just the way that you have to do it, but not every single day. Anyway, eggs. I was reading the symptoms of the COVID-19 report by an emergency room physician. I think he's out of, he's from New Orleans. And he says, okay, here are the symptoms of the COVID-19 reported by the emergency room doctor. Dry cough. They had nausea with or without vomiting. You know what it's like to be nauseous. They had a fever. They sort of had back pain over the flank in the kidney area. You know where your flanks are, just above your waist. They complained of abdominal discomfort. A lot of them had diarrhea. By the way, you will have vomiting and diarrhea when your body is trying to eject something that's very toxic. Now, this is, I think, interesting. They complained of a loss of the sense of smell. Okay, I get that. But they also had a loss of appetite. That makes sense. If you have a fever, your body almost goes into a fasting mode where it says, all right, let me not spend my energy trying to digest food. All of them had fatigue. Now, one of the newer symptoms that they're saying is happening is atrial fibrillation. When they do a blood test, they show that they had a low white blood cell count. Well, that's your active living and breathing immune system. They also had lower platelet levels. I find that interesting. They showed they had quite a bit more interleukin 6, which is a cytokine. They had pneumonia, which means their lungs are filling with their own fluids. They were suffering from what's called an inflammatory or a cytokine storm. Now, that is definitely a very severe medical emergency. If somebody has a cytokine storm, they will not be using herbs. They will be in the intensive care. They also had elevated levels of C-reactive protein. So when I go through this, what would be one of the symptoms of a zinc deficiency? Well, if they show up at the ER with a dry cough, they think coronavirus. But it is common to experience a chronic cough when you're low in zinc. Those that showed up to the ER with corona had nausea. Well, guess what? Being nauseous is a sign of a zinc deficiency. So is fever. Chronic pain in the lower back and the neck is a zinc deficiency, or it can be. You could have abdominal cramping just from a zinc deficiency. It's been well studied that children at orphanages in India that have chronic diarrhea that won't go away with drugs, if you give them zinc, all of a sudden that deficiency resolves. Did you know that you have a loss of sense of taste and smell when you're low in zinc? That's one of the reasons why people tend to crave foods that have a lot more flavor to them, like salty foods and things that are very sweet. Now, this right here, I'm not trying to make a big deal about this, but Dr. Alexander Shouse from California, I can't remember if he was from Berkeley or University of California. I may have got that wrong, but anyway, Dr. Alexander Shouse showed that anorexia nervosa, just extreme weight loss, that's a zinc deficiency. People tend to become, they have a lack of, they're not real sensitive to other people. They have apathy. Do you know that AFib can be caused by a zinc deficiency? Do you know that you could go to a doctor's office and you can have a lab test run and it can show that your white blood cell count is 3.5. That would be classic of a zinc deficiency. I know you could also have low platelets from low zinc. Your white blood cells just kind of mope around pretty sluggishly. They're not real robust when you're low in zinc. It's real common to have pneumonia and inflammation when you're low in zinc. Anyway, all that to say, these two, whether it's the COVID-19 or coronavirus and zinc deficiency, they all are part and parcel. I always think it's interesting. Dr. Zelenko, that's had this high, high success rate, I listened to his interview with Dr. Rudy Giuliani, and Tracy was the one that sent me that video, and he wanted my feedback. And Tracy, I've been thinking about it, and the more that I think about this, the way that the human immune system works, you've got to have some exposure. Now, obviously, I want you to have minimal exposure. But your immune system is designed to start generating antibodies against any foreign invading substance, whether that, well, I shouldn't have said it that way, but you know I'm referring to a virus. What if a situation arises internally like an internal bacterial infection from unknown origin or somebody has sepsis? Well, even Dr. Zelenko, that has this great success rate and cure treating people that have the coronavirus, he's using zinc. Now, he's using a boatload of it. What is he using, like 220 milligrams a day for 5 days? Yes, that would be toxic eventually if you took that much for a year. And that's been proven. Okay, Dr. James Robb, a pathologist who performed early studies. Okay, it says, this is just an article. Where did I get this? From McGill University. It says, Office for Science and Society, separating sense from nonsense. Anyway, the question is, can zinc lozenges help with coronavirus infections? And they go on to write that there is some evidence that zinc supplements can reduce the duration of the common cold, which is a coronavirus infection. Can sucking on zinc lozenges be useful in combating the COVID-19 disease? Okay, I'm not going to go into all that. That's just too much information. Anyway, I can't get to the punchline fast enough. They're just saying, okay, now fast forward to a 2020 coronavirus crisis. A blog post circulating on the internet attributed to Dr. James Robb, a pathologist. I don't know if you know what a pathologist is, but they study how disease manifests and transforms healthy tissue into unhealthy tissue. He carried out some early work on the coronaviruses back in the 1970s, claiming that the zinc lozenges are the silver bullet against the coronavirus. Now remember, this is back in the 1970s. I did not say in 2017. I said the 1970s. This is not... Anyway, where am I finding that? Sometimes these articles are hard to get through because I'm trying to cut all the jibber-jabber. Zinc has been shown, basically, if you can get the Goldilocks just right amount of zinc into the cells, it completely interrupts how the coronavirus would make a replication, or it would start spitting out mirror images or blueprints of this RNA, or anyway. I couldn't find the article. I'm sorry. I was headed that direction, but it didn't work out. Anyway. If you'd like to call me on the radio and ask me a question, the phone line is officially open at 903-586-5257. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, sir. I've been listening to you for a little while and there's all kinds of things I've been adding. What would you suggest a healthy person... vitamins to eat and, you know, take every day. I've added the little teaspoon of the baking soda and lemon water and zinc tablets.
Good.
I want to make sure I don't miss anything.
Well, the theme today was if you include eggs in your diet, you're going to put yourself in a whole different, better place as far as the ability of your immune system to do its job and work properly. Because the egg yolks themselves, they contain a very generous amount of immunoglobulins, and these are proteins that attach to a virus or a bacteria or a cancer cell to make it much easier for your body to respond to it. So if I said eggs are a superfood, I think I'm right. The other thing that I read was... this group of children with rheumatic fever, and I noticed that they took butter and cod liver oil. Well, cod liver oil is one of the most original superfoods that almost every mother gave their children. So if you considered to a little bit of supplementation of cod liver oil and making sure that you got some eggs, and see, I've never done that before, but they sell egg yolk powder for a person that doesn't want to consume eggs. I don't know how you feel about that, but I would just rather have the eggs. How do you feel about that?
Well, I love eggs. I'm afraid sometimes I eat too many.
Is that even possible to eat too many?
Six every day.
Well, have you been relatively strong and healthy?
Yep.
Okay. You're at least one observational study, I believe what you're telling me.
All right, so how about bacon? Can you eat too much bacon?
I think you can. Why would you bring that up?
Because bacon's delicious.
Well, if you're going to have bacon, if you can get bacon, and you can, that's uncured bacon, I think that's what you want. I think that's by far and away the safest protocol of all time. So what they do is, instead of using massive doses of preservatives or curing agents called sodium nitrites or sodium nitrates, they will use celery. Oh. So celery has these naturally occurring compounds to kind of cure the bacon. And so if you could just consider uncured bacon with celery juice, that would be much safer and much better for you to eat. Now, can I tell you one little tidbit of information about the people that live on the island of Okinawa?
Okay.
Historically, they have been so much healthier and had fewer health problems, and they live longer than just about anybody else on the planet. And that's been well studied and well proven. But they eat pork like it's going out of style. I watched a documentary of a province in China, or a town, where women completely run the show. I'm not going to make a comment about that. And if you make any comments to get me in trouble, I am going to deny all of it. But anyway, in this community, these women do everything for themselves. And the reporter there said, oh my goodness, they want me to help them cook supper. Look at what they're doing. And she was shocked because they were taking a big scoop of lard and putting in this giant wok so they could cook, you know, food for everybody. And they went out to the garden and they picked greens and vegetables and chopped them up. But this reporter was just shocked. And this is what she said. She said, look at how skinny and strong and lean these women are, and they're eating a boatload of lard. How does that work? Why aren't they fat? See, she's kind of basing it on the concept that fat makes you fat. But you got to have fat if you want to be able to absorb the nutrients from the food that you're eating. And so even the idea of eating butter or cod liver oil, that's pure fat. Avocados, that's got a boatload of fat. Using olive oil, that's fat. The more, if you have fat, that greatly enhances, increases how your body absorbs nutrients from the food that you're eating. So if you're having broccoli or green beans, put some fat on it. Melt some butter on your broccoli. That wouldn't be a problem, would it?
I don't like broccoli unless it tastes like hamburger.
I think I have a solution for you. We're going to make broccoli hamburger tacos tonight for you. And instead of using normal tortillas, we're going to use cauliflower tortillas. What do you think about that?
But okay.
I think I almost made you get nauseated and throw up this morning. Sorry about that. If you don't have the reason why I say broccoli is because more and more studies are showing that human beings have got to have sulfur in order to be strong and healthy. I mean, I can tell you right now, the state that has the lowest sulfur content in the soil is Mississippi. They have the most recorded heart disease surgeries, open heart surgeries, of any people in the U.S. They've got just about the most obesity and the diabetes. If you don't believe me, get in your car and drive across the... Take I-20 from... Actually, the border shut down. Never mind. You'll never make it. You can't get it out of the state. So... But Oregon has the highest sulfur content. So when you eat eggs, those are considered a sulfur-rich food. When you eat onions and garlic, those are rich in sulfur. When you have broccoli... Now, if you don't like broccoli... Scratch that and go on to what you do like. Maybe you like Brussels sprouts and the kale and asparagus and cauliflower. Those are all rich in sulfur. And so when we consume sulfur, it strengthens all the chemical bonds of your cells. You're heartier and stronger.
How about a quick, easy way to get rid of post-nasal drip, which I've had pretty much my whole life?
We have to find out what you're allergic to. What'd you say?
I'm allergic to lots of stuff, but I like to breathe, so I just keep on just dealing with it.
Well, I'm going to give you some ideas. Most likely we're going to discover that you're having a reaction to something, whether it's called dust mites, or it's black mold, or a particular food, the big ones for post-nasal drip are going to be dairy products, especially from a cow, not so much from a goat. So if you're used to eating yogurt every day, switch to goat yogurt. If you're eating cheese every day, just switch to goat cheese. It has a completely different class of proteins. But you might tell me that you're really, really agreeable to having, like, goat protein instead of cow protein.
Oh, yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay. Do that and see if it goes away. The other thing that I would have you consider, you could take aloe vera gel, and I mean the pure gel, if you have an aloe vera plant, and, well, I shouldn't say it that way. That just sounds kind of unsanitary. Find a way to apply it to the inner lining of your nostrils and see if that calms them down where you have less post-nasal drip.
Okay.
So, you got nothing to lose?
Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for your phone call.
Bye.
All right, there's a few moments left in the program. How many? 7, give or take. If you'd like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. You're listening to Health Essentials. Good morning. Welcome to the program. I can't believe I pushed the wrong button. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
I'm sorry for disrespecting you that way. Please forgive me for my insolence.
Can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Okay, Dr. Morgan, I've just got a little frog in my throat. I had recently a Lifeline screening test, and it indicated I had weak kidneys, one weaker than the other. I can't find the literature they sent me in the mail for the reading to give you. I've been looking for it. But before you went out there, I wanted to ask you, what can I do? Just walk more?
Well, when here's what you do. Yes, those are all good suggestions. When you walk more, what you do is you increase the rate of blood flow and oxygen that travels to the kidneys. I mean, I'm not trying to be ridiculous here, but if all you did was just sit in a chair all day long and not move around, you're just kind of asking for trouble with the kidneys. I think you got that.
Okay.
But yeah. studies show that if you could consume maybe just as little as a half of a teaspoon of just plain Jane baking soda, that is very beneficial to the kidneys. And so if you consume lemon juice, and my personal preference is if you can get lemon juice from organic lemons, you know how many times the ladies at the checkout stand make fun of me? They go out of their way to say, "This is ridiculous, Dr. Morgan, that you're buying organic lemons. I know for a fact that regular lemons are just as good." And you know what I tell them? I said, "Well, I feel good about this, and it's my money, so I'm buying organic lemons." But if you consume organic lemons, it may take the juice of 2 lemons a day that you either, you know, get one of those reaming devices, or you get like that hand press, or just squeeze it, however you got to get the lemon juice out of it. But fresh lemon juice is a living entity. It's got living enzymes in it. But if you were to add that to an herbal tea, and so if your kidneys are a bit weak or stressed, we want to do whatever we can to tilt the balance in your favor. So you've got dandelion root tea, you've got hibiscus tea, you've got rose hips tea. Good.
Okay.
What would happen if you'd put a little bit of lemon juice into that? And if you tell me that you need just a little bit of a sweetness to it, just put a drizzle of raw honey in there. That would probably be okay.
I drink it straight. And I'm doing the baking soda also.
What are you, like a cowboy from 1850 drinking everything straight?
Oh, yeah, I drink everything straight. My whiskey straight, everything.
That's not where I was going with that. But anyway, so if you would do that.
Kidding.
So I know you are. It was funny.
I used to drink it straight. I'll tell you, old number 7.
But those are days that are far off distant memory, right?
Right.
Okay, good man.
Thank God.
And so the kidneys, they need vegetable matter, and they need probably a lower protein diet, so this is one situation where I can't say, "Hey, load up on mega doses of, you know, bacon and steak." I don't mind if you have a little bit of that stuff. But when you eat, for example, eggs, they don't have a huge amount of protein. But I think if you could convince yourself to eat one green salad a day, and you can make it however you want. If you tell me you like cucumbers, Dude, yeah. That'd be great. If you want to throw an avocado in there, perfect.
Good for kidneys then, right?
Yes. And so the hardest thing on the kidneys is going to be sugar or anything with phosphoric acid. It just literally, phosphoric acid from a soft drink just beats the kidneys to death. I don't mean that literally, but just kind of a figure of speech.
Right.
You're not going to die if you drink a Pepsi. Or actually, you might die if you drink. So if you avoid sugary drinks that have phosphoric acid, so the kidneys, they need magnesium. Now, one thing that I had this lady come to see me recently, and I hope I can quote this correctly. Her kidney doctor said, okay, let's get you ready for dialysis right now because her GFR was right at 15. They said there's no way out of this, and she turned and said, I think she's a nurse. She said, you mean to tell me that my kidneys cannot get better? He says, no, it's impossible. I hope I'm not adding too much to it. And so she came back a couple weeks later, and they were 19. And then a couple weeks later, I came back, and I think they were 23. And I said, what did the doctor tell you? And she told me, she said, he said, whatever I'm doing, keep it up. But I use what are called protomorphogens. And protomorphogens are going to be compounds that come from the kidneys of an animal. You know what a woman told me yesterday? She went with her husband to a processing facility over in Panola County. Maybe that's Carthage. And she showed pictures to me, and she said, hey, wait. Can you take some of the cow's heart and the kidneys and grind it in with the ground beef? He said, oh, yes, we can do that for you. And I thought to myself, that is brilliant. So do you know what I'm telling you to do?
Yeah, what?
Well, if you could go to the butcher shop and find some kidneys and start eating them. Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Are you listening?
Kidney. I was writing down something, some of your notes.
I'm only just teasing you because I can imagine. But you can actually purchase supplements that are made from calf kidney extracts, which they, to me, are one of the most valuable tools that I have ever used to help the kidneys improve. And,
what are these supplements again?
Well, I use supplements by a company called Standard Process.
But they're
made from specific kidney extracts, and I have never seen a way toward improvement without using them. I know I'm being kind of hardcore on that statement, but obviously I am rooting for you. I love you. I want you to do well, but I want you to give your kidneys a chance to heal. So you've got to create the right set of circumstances to make that happen.
Can prednisone cause kidney problems?
It can cause just about anything. If you want to, if you want to have your blood sugar shoot up, prednisone would do that, and that's what it does.
It nearly killed me.
And I'm not trying to be negative. I'm glad.
With a staph infection I had recently.
Well, and that's hard on the kidneys too. And so we got to clean your body up. And so, baking soda, lemon juice. If you want some celery juice,
I'm doing all that. What kind of juice?
Celery.
Oh, yeah, I've done that. Really
so if you have a juicer and want to run a few ribs of celery through there and maybe one carrot and a green apple and some ginger, you get that ginger root. That stuff is so potent. Actually, if you ask me what would be my go-to if I became sick with a virus, I'd be juicing ginger instantly. It's a wonder drug.
Celery, ginger, and what else?
Well, I said a green apple and maybe a carrot.
Green apple. There you
Unfortunately,
go.
We just ran out of time, so call me back next
God
week.
God bless you. I love you.
You better be 100% better this time tomorrow, okay?
Yes, sir. I
all
will.
Right. Thanks. Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. Be blessed. You
Thanks,
are.
Buddy. Bye.